All right, and welcome to Fast Break Breakfast, NBA podcast, off-season special edition. My name is Keith. I'm here all alone in the baby dungeon. NBA Summer League is all over. We have officially hit the deep off-season. We still do have some basketball because of the men's and women's Olympic teams that are playing, headed to the disastrous Rio Summer Games. And they did just cover, the men's team did just cover a 48.5-point spread against China, a game that I eagerly tuned into to catch some glimpses of Grizzlies second-round draft and stash guy, Wang Zhilin. And, of course, the tournament is still going on. But unsurprisingly, very predictably, the team I adopted, Pedro's Posse, got unceremoniously dumped because they were awful. I think Bibby, J. Will kind of were sad out there. They maybe should have gotten some better finishers around them and played way less terribly. But as we have entered the deep offseason, John and Chuck are nowhere to be found as we have begun our deeply needed recharge time away from each other. We will get together to record some true canon episodes at some point, but not sure when that'll be just yet. But this offseason, I'm going to do something new and have some guests on and see if that's something that I enjoy and that you guys enjoy that works for us. So today's guest is Josh Lloyd, a man who left the medical industry behind to choose to work in fantasy sports. And for longtime listeners, you should know the fantasy alarm has been permanently disabled for this show. But before I call Josh, I want to tell you about a sponsor, Fan Essentials. Fan Essentials is a subscription service that provides unique NBA gear and gear for other non-NBA teams. They got some college stuff, some football stuff, baseball, and who knows what else. But you go to fanessentials.net. They have packages starting at $14.99 a month. It's delivered to your door. You enter the code FBBF, as in Fast Break Breakfast, and we get a small piece of that, and you get a 30% discount on your order. So go to fanessentials.net and get all the essentials you need. Also, we'll be experimenting with sticking some of those end-of-the-show commercials that you might have heard throughout the show, and I know that's kind of miserable. Again, just experimenting in the off-season with it. If you're listening on SoundCloud, which we are now on SoundCloud, you won't be hearing these, but if you are listening anywhere else, go ahead and get that skip button ready. I will give you a heads up when they're coming, and one is coming, so go ahead and 30-second skip straight to Josh in 3, 2, 1. My guest today is the host of the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast, formerly the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Podcast, just recently switched over to the Locked On Network. He's also a fantasy analyst and writer for Basketball Monster, and also works on Hardwood Paroxysm, along with Fast Break Breakfast, which we don't really mention all that often. But anyway, Josh Lloyd, how are you doing today?
Good, Keith. It's good to speak to you again.
Yeah, good to speak to you. So, listeners, I met Josh 2 years ago at Vegas Summer League, and if you didn't catch it from his brief hello, he is an Australian living in he lives in Melbourne. Isn't that right? Is it Melbourne?
Yeah, that's correct. Yep.
Yep. And so he came over to Vegas Summer League. We met last year. We'd followed each other on Twitter briefly and then met up in person and then I saw him again this year at Vegas Summer League. So the funny part is we had planned to podcast together when we were actually in the same town in Las Vegas, but my laptop started having weird electrical issues. Perhaps it did not love the humidity or something. It was shutting on and off and you had some random hardware problems. But anyway, now we're doing it.
We are finally getting it done. When I was over there, because all my stuff is running through, it's all bought over in Australia, all my podcasting equipment, mixers and microphones and stuff. When I plugged it in over there, the difference in voltage just provided this just constant irritating buzz through my ear. And I had to do a couple of podcasts while I was over there. I didn't want to subject anyone to any more of that just ridiculous ringing that was consistently through my ears. But we're here now. Everything should be smooth sailing and ready to go, Keith.
Yeah, dude, we got that 70 volts or 70 watts or whatever it is over on the...
Yeah.
I don't know anything about electricity.
110. I think okay. It's 110 volts, but we do 240. So we're max power over here.
One of them. So maybe it's the... Yeah, I don't know. alternating current is not my expertise. I have
me either.
Very few expertises, which is why I podcast. So yeah, tell me about your, I'm curious for you. So you've now come to Vegas Summer League twice, and how long were you there this year?
I did 8 days last year and 8 days this year.
See, that's incredible. Tell me, I'm mainly curious, like what's your daily routine when you're out at Vegas Summer League? We spent a lot of our last show, I was trying to explain to people about what Summer League is and actual experience and the fact that it is, you know, like 1 p.m. to 10 p.m. of basketball every day. But did you settle into routine? What was your daily routine in Vegas?
Yeah, it is a pretty weird situation given that there's 8 games on a day and you are there from 1 till near the last game wraps up sometime after 9:30. So I don't know what I would do. I would wake up in the morning and wake up slowly, I guess, have a bit of a sleeping, because back here I'm used to getting up relatively early. Like prior to going over there, when I'd get up for work, it'd be up at 6 a.m. in the morning. But over there, I took advantage of the sleep in and the fact that, you know, my work day, and I'm using air quotes, which you can't see here, work, started at 1 p.m. So I just get up very, very slowly, you know, walk around the hotel room, maybe walk around the strip for a little bit, head across to the arena and take in games from there. And then by the time it ended up, we're talking 8.5 hours, and it doesn't sound taxing, but when you're watching basketball for 8.5 hours and you're trying to work and take notes and watch and talk to people and make introductions, connections, it gets rather tiring, I think.
Absolutely. And the seating arrangements in both arenas, in both Thomas and Mack and Cox Pavilion, not very comfortable. Just the hard plastic arena seating. So it wears on the body, no matter how young and spry we may feel.
Yeah, I absolutely. And I'm not that young, nor am I that spry. But yeah, and just sitting on those chairs in the one position, like you're a relatively tall individual, Keith, as am I. And yeah, being squished up in chairs for 8.5 hours at a time is tough. Yes, you move around, you go to the other things, but the other stadium. But walking around up and down stairs, I feel really old and really complaining here that I got to sit and watch basketball for 8 hours a day for 8 days straight. But still, it does tire you out.
It's a grind. And some people have the gall to complain about the quality of play. I'm not one of those. I enjoy it. I enjoy the guys, you know, they're scrapping for their pro careers. I don't care how good it all looks. Like I just like the grit and the energy that they're all giving off.
Well, if you want to talk about grit, if you want to go and see Aaron Kraft play his trade, that's the place to do it, because he is all grit. He's going to be in Summer League for the next 5-6 years, I reckon, just diving on loose balls, diving into the stands, harassing people with borderline illegal tactics. Aaron Kraft is the epitome of Summer League play of a guy trying to make a career out of it.
I agree. There's a lot of guys. I was stunned that this is only like Jack Cooley's third summer of playing Summer League. I could have sworn he was doing it for like 5 or 6. Like
He looks a veteran of Summer League.
He's going to – I don't know if they keep all-time Summer League stats, but I feel like he's probably at least top 5 in rebounds all-time in NBA Summer League after just a few seasons of doing it all.
Well, you'd have to be close.
After you wrapped up the games, did you just head back to your hotel? Did you do any late-night gambling or
Not really.
Yeah.
I headed back and – you know, a couple of nights I said I had to work. I had to record shows of my own while I was there. So you know, that set me back, plus the hour and a half to work out why there was a buzzing in my head and then figuring out that I couldn't fix it. So that set me back that first night. But most of the time, you know, I'm not a big gambler. And by big gambler, I mean I didn't gamble whatsoever.
Right.
And yeah, most of the time I just sort of went back. I was stuffed by the time I got back and didn't do a huge amount at night. Now I know you were frequenting the craps tables, Keith.
I was trying. Well, so I still don't understand craps very well.
Oh, I don't understand it at all.
I actually played a lot of roulette, which everyone tells me is the worst game to play as far as your odds of winning. So like the house has the best odds on that one. But man, I was picking all the right numbers. So it was going great. Like I had a
roulette's the only game I've ever played as a table game.
It's yeah.
And I won that one time that I played.
Well, it's incredibly easy to understand. So it has that going for it. So, yeah, I mainly played roulette and then walked around and tried to, you know, inconspicuously spot NBA stars doing things. So that was my main hobby. You mentioned Sorry, go ahead.
You found quite a few NBA stars. Well, yeah, just loitering around gaming rooms.
No doubt. I mean, I found NBA stars. I also found guys who weren't stars blowing lots of money at gambling tables, and I was shaking my head at them. You said earlier, like, you know, you had to work to record your podcast. So yep. you have a daily fantasy podcast. I guess you could probably say you have like a daily fantasy podcast. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does because you say daily and you think of daily fantasy sports, but I do it daily.
Right.
And I cover daily fantasy sports and I cover, you know, traditional season-long fantasy sports. And when the NBA season's kicked off, it's 7 days a week for, you know, 6 months of the season.
Right. So you are now in do you take much of an off season? I've noticed you've gotten a little lazy. You're only putting out maybe two or three podcasts a week.
Exactly. This is the off season here. Look, I'm probably going to be doing one or two shows this week, maybe. But then when the majority of the NBA is sort of hibernating through August, when there's not a lot happening, that's when all the fantasy preparation stuff starts. So that's when I'll be starting to work on all my content and projections and all that sort of stuff. And I'll be doing two or three shows through then. And then through September, I reckon we'll start going 6-7 days a week. Maybe not exclusively, but once the season kicks off end of October, it's 7 days a week every week until we reach the, I think we did it until the conference finals this season.
That's amazing. So how many years is this of you doing the daily fantasy daily podcast?
I started it in February 2014.
So, all right. Yeah, so two full seasons, right?
Yep, two full seasons and one sort of half a season. About 630 episodes, I think we've knocked out.
Do you have any like tricks or ideas for how you don't get burned out? Like, I get burnt out on the NBA. I honestly, and I get made fun of by Chuck and John, the other co-hosts, how I lose steam normally about the conference finals or the playoffs. Like when most of regular fans or just regular people start tuning in for the first time, I'm like, I'm good. Like, I get burnt out and I don't, this year I did, you know, I guess the last 2 years, the Warriors have really maintained my interest, but I find myself not wanting to read about the NBA, having trouble getting up the energy to podcast. So do you have any tricks for not getting burned out?
My main trick is that I get paid to do it. So if I don't do it, I don't get paid. So that's probably number one trick. But I'm like you, once the conference finals hits and that's sort of me wrapping up what I need to do with the podcast and work-wise, then I sort of start to tune out a little bit and then start to focus myself more on draft preparations, and the NBA finals becomes more of an afterthought, a sideshow, as opposed to what I'm doing. But in terms of being burnt out, all right, look, last season I worked a full-time job plus a part-time job with the podcast and Basketball Monster, and it was taxing to do it, and I just kept pushing through going, hey, you've got to just keep doing this, you've got to keep doing this no matter how hard it is. And I feel like an idiot complaining that, oh, it's hard. Yeah, good on you, mate. You got to come home, watch basketball and talk about it. Like, it's not manually taxing labor, but it is when you're working from 7:30 a.m. till 10:30 p.m. every day. But my trick is just, it's not really a trick. It's just like I love doing it. I enjoy doing it. I enjoy the basketball. I enjoy watching it. I enjoy providing semi-entertaining, semi-useful service for people who listen to the show. And the feedback that I get keeps me going as well, that people are 98% positive with any comments I get back. So that always helps me. And more just the I'm aiming to get it into something where it currently sits now, where it's sort of a legitimate thing that I'm doing.
That's great. You'll have to tell me more about how to make money doing this. That sounds very interesting.
It is very interesting.
I'm actually curious. So that one thing I wanted to ask you was, you talk about like having to work and then coming home and watching games. I'm curious, with you being like, you're 15 hours ahead of me right now in Nashville. I'm curious, what is your routine when you were working, and is it as now when you're not as, like, you have more time to devote on watching ball? Like, what's your daily routine of actually watching the NBA games? Because they're coming on like in the afternoon for you, right?
Yeah, well, they start at 11 a.m. That's the 7 p.m. Eastern game.
Okay.
Is at 11 a.m. And the West Coast late game starts at about 2:30 p.m. here, and they wrap up about 4:45 in the afternoon.
Right.
So that was the time that I was at work. So it was just a lot of looking at my phone, setting up alerts, Twitter alerts. I had the Bleacher Report team stream app with its notification. So when stuff would happen, important stuff, trades, injuries, I would have that happen on the phone, constantly checking apps for scores and box scores and monitoring Twitter and that sort of stuff. Coming home after that and then preparing myself for the show, putting League Pass on, watching condensed versions of games, doing that, reading about game reports and then doing the show. And then when that was all done, sitting on the couch and maybe choosing one game a day to watch in its entirety.
Okay, I gotcha. That makes sense. I'm probably going to bleep out that Bleacher Report team stream reference because they don't give us money. So,
fair enough. Yeah. You got to do what you need to do.
No, yeah. So that's you're mainly following. You were following along at work, you know, on your phone, and then you would prepare to your show, and then you kind of relax and watch a game.
Like, yeah, exactly.
That's pretty good. I'm just curious how everyone consumes the NBA, and especially in your situation, you know, being in a different time zone. For me, now that I'm almost entirely a stay-at-home dad, the idea of like 11 a.m. games to 5 just seems incredible. Like that seems like best case scenario. Like make that my work day. But now are you saying like, so you don't have to work the day job all the time or?
No, not at all. I've resigned from that day job. So
can we talk about your day job?
Absolutely.
You were a pharmacist, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So you quit being a pharmacist to
yes.
podcast and write about fantasy sports.
Correct.
Is this because of Australia's socialist medicine programs? Because I got to tell you, being a pharmacist is a pretty sweet job in America.
Is it? It's not here. I tell you what it is. It's over here. The pay is not commensurate with the work, with yep. the abuse, with the expectations. Like you get paid decent-ish money, but it's nothing spectacular. It's nothing, and in terms of opportunities for advancement, they're zero. And just constantly dealing in a retail sector with people, and anyone who works in retail will be able to understand this. But dealing with healthcare / retail / sick people / idiots,
right?
It's not a great mix for not a great amount of pay.
That makes sense. Yeah, no, that's you should also blame your government though for making medicine so cheap because, yeah, pharmacists in the U.S. make a very healthy living. It's one of the more lucrative job careers. I mean,
a lot of it to do over here is there's just an overabundance of pharmacists as well because the idiots in charge over here decided to just, oh, we're just going to start opening more and more pharmacy schools to register more and more people. And there's people around who are just like, I can't get enough work. So wages get pushed down in that way.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's, yeah. I'm glad you've at least found more joy just doing the fantasy sports. But when I found out you'd left your pharmacy career for fantasy sports, I was kind of like, I wonder if that's a worse job over there. I mean, it's probably also a terrible job in the U.S. because you do have to deal with customers and you do deal in retail. But a lot of it is just, you know, fulfilling the doctor's orders. But anyway, we probably lost some listeners with the boredom about the...
I'd be interested if you have any pharmacists in the States that listen to your show, whether they can corroborate what I've said or whether they just like, they're just, you know, like... Scrooge McDuck and diving into pools of gold coins after their day at work, easy day of it.
I mean, it's not like a full scale doctor's pay, but it's like the one step below in the U.S. I feel like the good job is to have is there's the pharmacist who just sits in the back and fills the bottles, and then there ends up being like I guess the lower on the rung pharmacists who are you know have to deal with more of the customers. But anyway, I'm curious. How did you first get interested in the NBA? I mean, it's not a huge sport in Australia.
It is okay. A pretty big sport. It's not obviously we don't have a big league here, but we our sporting landscape is dominated by Australian football, rugby, and cricket.
Yep.
But if you survey people under the age of 35 here, the interest in American sports is massive. And the way that Australia is divided, we have two main football codes, as I said, rugby and Australian football. There are two states who play exclusively rugby, and they wouldn't know anything about Australian football. And then you switch it to the other states, they don't know anything about rugby. But across the whole country, everyone, again, in that younger bracket, knows about the NBA and is pretty, you know, switched on to what is happening again, especially with the younger people. So I started watching the NBA back when I was in primary school, which I believe you guys call elementary school.
Yep.
So when I was 11 years old, maybe. And we used to get one show per week, 1 hour highlight show per week. I think it was called NBA Action on a Saturday morning. And they'd show, it was sort of like Inside Stuff, that sort of a show, but hosted by an American who used to play in our league, whose name was Steve Carfino. He used to host that, and it was just highlights from the week. And it was around that time when Jordan won his first championship. So talking like 1990, 1991, that sort of time. Jordan was obviously massive. The shoes, the explosion of NBA trading cards hit Australia at that time as well. The Charlotte Hornets came in. Everyone wanted to buy Charlotte Hornets jerseys. And that's how it all developed around that time. That's when the NBA really took off, around that 1990, 1991. Mm-hmm. And I was at that prime sort of age of 11 years old. And got into it and started watching it from there, and then started collecting the trading cards and being able to find some way to watch something, which was impossible. You could never watch a full game over here for years, probably until the end of the 90s, I would say.
That's actually similar to me in the fact that growing up, we didn't have cable. Like, we just, in my household, we only had like 4 TV stations. And so there was no NBA on except for like Sunday afternoons and then the playoffs. But then in the late 90s, when I was a senior in high school, like a year before I would go to college, we actually got cable, and that was like late 90s. And I that's where I got really into basketball, watching TNT and watching all that. And then in college, I became an addict. That's really interesting. So did you have a lot of other buddies who were also, like, were your buddies growing up, like in primary school? Were they into it, or?
Mainly more when I hit secondary school. In primary school a little bit, but in secondary school, that's when that sort of trading card thing kicked off. And
yeah,
pretty much everybody in our year level was collecting Upper Deck cards and trading cards, and who's going to be the first one to get the Shaquille O'Neal rookie card, where you had to mail in a redemption card to pick it up, and then people would drawing NBA logos and selling them in the playground. So that's when it really kicked off, sort of that year 7, year 8 for me and all my friends. And there was like one store in Melbourne City that you could buy starter jackets and NBA caps from, we'd make a pilgrimage into there every couple of weeks, months maybe, to go into the city to see what sort of stuff we could find from in there.
That sounds that's cool. When do you remember first starting to play fantasy basketball?
I think it was 2008, so it was a fair way after that. Right. I sort of lost a bit of interest in the NBA towards the start of the 2000s. I watched a lot of NFL and college football, and I was right across all of that stuff. I knew basically every player on every college team all throughout that time frame through to the end of the 2000s, I guess, and was trying to sort of, again, even from back then, trying to find a way out of being a pharmacist. Mm-hmm. And looked to do some NFL work. That wasn't really happening for me. And then I started, I'd been playing fantasy basketball, and I'd won a couple of leagues in a row down here. And I thought, you know what, I'm just going to start doing stuff. I found an opening in the market, I guess. Hey, there's people aren't providing enough content, and I think I can do it. I think I'm good at it. I think I can write. And then I started doing that, and I go, you know what, I think I can talk about it as well. And then I started doing that, and it just grew from there. So it took a while. Again, I started playing 2008 and didn't start writing on my site till 2013, and the podcast was 2014. But it took a bit of time, and then it worked out that I thought I was okay at it, and other people agreed with me, I guess.
Yep. So you you grew up watching the Bulls, and so you are a Bulls fan still, right?
That's correct, yep.
I'm curious, do you have a pro football team or a college team that was your favorite?
Yeah, absolutely. I was a Miami Dolphins fan in pro football. College, I'm a USC Trojans fan.
Okay. Because I was getting a little worried that it was going to be – the USC is kind of a front-running school. Having the Dolphins is okay because they've been a sad sack for a while. I was kind of worried you were going to be like a New England Patriots fan. And then like
Yankees Cowboys.
And then a Yankees Cowboys Duke basketball. Yeah.
No.
All right, good.
The USC one is because I had a friend that went to USC, and we went over and visited over there, and I went to two USC games over at the Coliseum. So that's how that that's how that came about. So that wasn't a front that I started actually following them after they won those national championships in the sort of mid 2000s. It was after that. And then because I had someone who went there and I was able to get tickets and tailgating and all that sort of stuff over there.
I think actually all of those national championships have been removed from the record based on rule breaking.
don't bring that up. That was so unjust.
Right.
Unjust.
So, and it is good, even though you did kind of jump on the bandwagon, like tons of other people kind of close to our age with Michael Jordan and the Bulls, you've stuck with it, and it hasn't really been a pleasant road for the last... I mean, it's been fine, but, like, right now, I feel like their franchise is kind of at a what-do-we-do-now point. However...
It's yuck. It is yuck at the moment.
Well, it's gross. I mean, them getting Rondo and then making that swing for Dwayne Wade showed a kind of a lack of foresight. They're just grasping at, I don't know, whatever old shiny thing popped up. But their summer league team took care of business. Maybe got a little optimism. Won the whole thing. Did you have any observations about the Bulls summer league team or any of the guys that stood out, or do you think it was all a summer mirage?
No, well, this is the thing that heading into the off season, the Derrick Rose trade went down, and I went, okay, look, Derrick Rose used to be my favorite player, but obviously we know what sort of slowed him down.
Right.
But the trade happened, and I was like, okay, that's great. That's good. I like what we've got here in terms of young prospects, Portis, Mirotić. Bring in Jerry and Grant, see how he develops. And Butler's only 26 or 27. I was ready for a year of being terrible. I was ready for a year where we could get a potential top 10 pick, potentially two lottery picks if the Sacramento pick conferred. And look, just see how these guys develop. Drafted Valentine, great. He's going to have the ball in his hands a lot. He's going to play 25 minutes, and we're going to see what he can do. Can he hit the three? Can he play as a point guard? What can he do? How's Butler going to manage this? How we're going to give Mirotić a chance? We're going to see what Felizio can do. And that's all those guys from the summer league team. But then they stuffed up and brought in all these I'm not going to rehash the Rondo and Wade stuff because pretty much everyone has a very similar opinion. It's just a ludicrous decision to bring those guys in. I don't know what the end game is. I don't know what the thought process behind any of it is, but those summer league guys, they're the guys I was excited for. I wanted to see what Valentine could do. I wanted to see what Grant could do. And he wasn't great in summer league, but Portis was really energetic. Felizio was an animal. And this is exactly what I was excited for this season. We weren't going to win many games before Rondo and Wade came in, maybe 30, maybe less, who knows. But I would have got to see what Valentine can do. Now he's not going to play. Grant's not going to play. Portis is going to play limited. Felizio is not going to play. It's just... puts you in a why do I bother?
Yeah. I think they're one of the... this is the time of the year where every fan base is optimistic. Like almost every team is optimistic. They're like, oh, well, we did this and this. We have this to look forward to. But I think the Bulls are one of the teams where their fan base, a lot of them, are not optimistic. They're like, what are we looking towards? Like, what's happening here? What's the plan? I feel for you there. And you're kind of a big Mirotić fan, aren't you?
Yeah, huge, huge Mirotić fan. I think that he was dreadfully mishandled last season by Hoiberg. He was, and I said this, I reckon, at least 50 times on the podcast last season. If you go back and look at the games where Mirotić, and you can actually check this on Basketball Reference. I maybe should have had this up if I knew I was going to have a Nikola Mirotić love fest.
You have that page bookmarked, don't you? I mean,
yeah, I've just got, I do. You're absolutely right. But any game that he played decent minutes, he was unbelievable, and he put up just huge, huge statistics. But the problem is, if he went out there in the first 2 minutes and missed his first three shots, Hoiberg would just go, sorry Nick, you're just gonna have to sit down for the rest of the game and not play at all. And that, to me, that's ridiculous, because if he's a 45% shooter, he's never going to hit 45% of his shots. He's not going to hit 4.5 out of his 10 shots. He might go 0 of 10, and then he might go 8 of 10.
Right.
After that, it's just, but then you're messing with his confidence in that game. Oh, you've missed two shots, go and sit down. And then after that, what becomes in his head is the next game, I better hit my first shot, or else I'm not going to play. And it was just ridiculous the way that they used him. Now, I do have those stats up here. In the games, he played 13 games of over 30 minutes, which is nowhere near enough.
Yeah.
But in those games, he averaged 22.5 points, 6.5 rebounds, 2.6 assists. He hit and I'm going to have to work this out, over four threes a game in those games. Over a steal a game and a block a game as well. And shot 49% from the field and 47% from three, 86% from the free throw line with a true shooting of 67%. And to me, they're really good numbers. But he just wasn't able to play that often. And his defense, people say he's bad at defense. That's because people say, because he's European, oh, he must suck. He's not great, but he's also not bad. He's average. And he was just completely mishandled last season.
This has taken me back to my 2012-13 Ed Davis obsession. Where,
I love Ed Davis. When, and he was buried.
When Ed Davis, I think it was the 12-13 season, it was Lionel Hollins last season. And it was something like in games the entire season, in games that Ed Davis played 20 minutes, the Grizzlies were 21-1. And the only and the only loss was his plus minus was like plus 32. Like it was a weird game where the Wizards jumped out to a 30-point lead and then they let the bench stay in and they came almost back. And so he would drop passes or miss rotations and then like he would get benched and then they wouldn't play him. And the whole time you're like, just play this guy. This guy should be playing 25 minutes a game off the bench. Like the Grizzlies are incredible when they do that. But they never played him.
He went from being an above average starter in Toronto, and I was really excited to see what he could do. And then they traded him, and as soon as that trade went down, I'm like, this is not going to be good because he's obviously playing behind Randolph and Gasol, and that's fine. But he's so much better than the amount of people that have been played above him in pretty much every stop, even in Toronto before he got traded. It took him a while to get a starting spot in Los Angeles with the Lakers. It was just an abomination that he couldn't get more playing time there. In Portland, yeah, fair enough. They had some other guys there, but he still should always play more than he's been playing. And I'm completely with you on Davis.
Yeah. It also, Dave Yeager's first season in the first round of the playoffs, game 7 against the Thunder, the infamous Zach Randolph got suspended for like the weird non-punch on Steven Adams. So in a game that Zach Randolph was suspended, Dave Yeager did not play Ed Davis until there was 30 seconds left of the game. Still,
who did he play? Ryan Hollins?
He played. No. Ryan Hollins had not. he had not fallen in love with Ryan Hollins yet. He started Mike Miller at the four, and then John Luehr was the backup four, and that's the only guys that played. James Johnson got a DMP. Ed Davis played 1 minute. It was one of the angriest I've ever been. I mean, I tried to chalk it up. I tried to objectively chalk it up to that it was Dave Yeager's first year, but that seed of hatred had been hiding in my heart for all these years. And now that Yeager left, I've given it opportunity to grow and bloom. So
that was that season where James Johnson, we signed James Johnson midseason and he came in and basically just got three steals and three blocks in every game.
James Johnson that first year was one of the most, he was a hurricane. Like when he came in, his like net rating on those games were incredible. And again, they just wouldn't play him. Like I thought that the Grizzlies had found the missing piece to them being a championship team. And like, they just didn't play him. Now I'm getting sad and we get our wrap up.
James Johnson was a guy that the Bulls drafted as well. And he never got on the court at all. And then he'd go in and play 15 minutes wherever he went and just destroy everybody on both ends. And again, it just never felt like he was able to. Oh, he's lost it now. He can't do anything anymore, really. His athleticism and defense has dropped. But there was that stage for that two or three seasons when he was one of the best perimeter defenders in the entire NBA, and he just didn't play enough.
I'm really sad because, as you said, he's now seemed to laid off the aerobic activity a bit. He's gained some weight, and it's like, man, we never got to see. I just wanted him to go to after the Grizzlies got rid of him, I just wanted him to go to a terrible team. I just wanted to see him play 30 minutes a night. I wanted to know what 30 minutes of James Johnson looked like, but that's just for my dreams. All right, kind of to wrap up, I'm curious, what is, you mentioned about the burnout when you get to the playoffs, I'm curious, what is your favorite part of the NBA season? And I've broken it down into five different segments. You got the opening weeks of the season, you have like the big glut of the regular season, like through the All-Star break. You have then like the end of the regular season and the start of the playoffs. Then you have the conference finals, and then you have draft, free agency, summer league. So of those, what's your favorite time?
I really like draft, free agency.
Right.
But I would say probably first weeks of the season. So you can see, because especially in my industry in terms of fantasy basketball, there's just stuff that's all over the place. Like, and people are just panicking with decisions they're making in their fantasy leagues, and people have questions of why is this guy not playing? What is this team doing with their rotation? People get really, really invested in small sample size. Oh, this guy shot 58% from three. That's probably going to hold for the rest of the year, yeah? And you've got to try and talk everyone down from ledges when a player – like, and it happened this season. Chris Paul and John Wall are two names that come to mind. They were dreadful in the first 2 weeks of the season. And then you had everybody, like, tweeting at me, posting messages over on Basketball Monster. These guys suck. I've ruined my season. They're terrible. Why would I bother picking those guys? They're useless. And then, you know, a month later, and then they're the top three players in fantasy basketball through December and January, and it's great for the chaos that ensues in those first couple of weeks.
Yep, I have the exact same answers. Like, I love, man, once the finals end and it enters just that, like, a month of just dreaming about what the new teams will be like. I love it. And then once the season starts, once we hit the playoffs, and I don't have the option to watch a random like Nuggets or Magic game, I start getting bored. All right. If you have, and this is on the spot, if you could change any NBA rule, what would it be? Do you have a rule that drives you crazy that you would love to see changed?
Yeah, I've got plenty, actually, and I've rant about this quite often. If I had to pick one, I hate free throws.
You hate free throws?
Hate them.
Okay.
Hate them in general.
Tell me more.
If you're going to call something a free throw, you shouldn't have to work for it. It's free. Automatic 1 point. Give it to them.
Okay.
Or you make it, they shoot it from the charge circle. Just put it under, layup, and goes in. If it's going to be called free, and if it's going to be a penalty on the other team, it should be free. And it makes the games boring. It slows things down. And I tie that into the free throw contests at the end of games. Oh, we have to foul so we can get the ball back and stop the clock.
Right.
That is just... it is just infuriating to me.
Well, I got to say, your idea of having him shoot it for the charge circle would be insanely boring.
It would be. It's boring as it is now. Like, yes, sometimes they miss it, but the fact that you can, and this all goes into that hacker debate, that you can do something that is supposedly a penalty towards you, but it ends up to your benefit, means there's something wrong.
Okay.
You're deliberately breaking the rules. It's like me going out there and seeing a guy across the street, and I don't like this guy's face. I'm going to bash him, and it ends up being in my favor because he ends up moving away, and I don't get any penalty on it. I did the wrong thing. I kicked him in the head multiple times, and he moved away because that was, and my punishment was he got to move to the hospital.
Josh, because you're an Australian, you may not get this. You just described the American dream. You do whatever you want without consequence, and it benefits you. That is that's what our country was built on. So,
that's exactly how those penalty free throws hacker sort of, you know, you do the wrong thing and you get the benefit from it. Cool, well, it makes no sense to me.
Your no free throw idea is ludicrous. Do you have a reasonable rule change? Do you have a rule change you think they might actually implement?
I think they should have some sort of advantage rule. So if someone commits a foul, and you know when they commit a foul, say open court 2-on-1 breakaway, they commit a foul to stop the play.
Yeah.
Just let them play on. See if they're going to score it.
See, now that is a perfect rule. I am 100% in favor of that. I especially want to see it on shot clock violations.
Oh, that
is the worst.
Oh,
like these.
That is. It makes no sense.
These referees, they're actually really good. And they could easily apply an advantage rule. Like, if you see the ball going to a guy, if there's no, like, it slows the game down by blowing the whistle and making them inbound it. And then when they stop a fast break or they stop transition because, like, they think the shot clock goes off. Yeah, that's a terrible rule. And also, I do like the foul rule, how it's called internationally, where they let some of the stuff go on the fast breaks because they play advantage. Like, I definitely think advantage should be played. So there, that's much better than your free throw idea. So
yeah, I've got lots of rule ideas, but they're the two that immediately came to my mind. But that advantage one, it's common sense watching it where you go, oh, just let them play. Look, they've dished the pass off. That guy's just laid a layup. No, sorry, we can't, because the guy who passed got fouled after as he was giving it off, yet the guy was streaking in for an easy dunk. Just let it count. It's very straightforward.
Absolutely. All right, and finally, since we are Fast Break Breakfast and we have wholeheartedly embraced the gimmick and everything we do, what's your ideal breakfast? Do you have an ideal breakfast?
Okay, I'm probably gonna send this podcast into a meltdown here. I don't eat breakfast.
Not at all, ever.
Very, very rarely. I maybe once a month, maybe.
Do you drink coffee or anything, or do you just go no food until it's lunchtime?
Correct. Yep.
Wow. No, it's not a problem. I mean, see, I'm not a big breakfast eater myself, so I won't judge. But do you like any breakfast foods? Do you ever eat like breakfast for dinner or anything, or is it just you just don't want to touch it?
No, it's not that I'm anti-breakfast food. It's more that I would rather have that extra 15 minutes, 20 minutes of sleep time rather than have to get up, prepare myself a meal, and then get myself off to work. Now, maybe that I'm not waking up at 6 a.m. to get to work, you know, right, at a ludicrously early hour. I can ease myself in and maybe I can prepare myself a breakfast. I like bacon. I like toast. I like muffins. I like pancakes.
All right, you're not a true monster. That's good.
No. I like all that stuff. I just don't. The cost benefit analysis of me waking up and making it definitely leans in the favor of not doing that.
That's pretty good. We might have to, now that you have a little more free time in your mornings, we might have to come up with a breakfast plan for you to try to. I'm worried you might be missing out on some stuff. So maybe
definitely. I'm not a big cereal guy. I know that.
Oh yeah, cereal's for children.
Yep.
I don't want to, you know, insult our cereal eaters. I mean, I like a Cinnamon Toast Crunch, you know, at night every now and then, but that's more of a treat. Like, anyway. All right. Well, Josh, thanks so much for your time. Thanks for joining us. Do you have anything you want to plug? Do you want to tell us more about the Locked On Network that you're now part of?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I've just joined the Locked On Network. Many of you will know David Locke, who is the radio announcer for the Utah Jazz. He's had a podcast for the last 2-3 years called Locked On Jazz. We do it every day covering the Utah Jazz, and he expanded it to one where he did Locked On NBA, just covering league-wide stuff. And then probably 2-3 months ago, he started expanding his network to do a podcast for every team. So he's got Locked On Spurs, Locked On Thunder, Locked On Celtics, Locked On Pelicans, Locked On Clippers, Locked On Lakers. He's branching out through the whole NBA, and he's going into the NFL with it as well. So basically, you get a whole bunch of really top-notch beat writers like Fred Katz is doing the Locked On Thunder. Mm-hmm. Jay King is doing Locked On Celtics. Brad Rowland is doing Locked On Hawks. I don't remember everyone that's doing. DJ Foster is doing Locked On Clippers. But there's a whole bunch of guys doing it, and guys who are beat reporters for each team. And then I'm doing the fantasy basketball stuff across the entire league as part of that network as well. So I'll be getting a lot of those guys on throughout the season as guests on the show as well to bring some team focused information.
So yeah, that sounds good. And I know a lot of people will want to follow that. And so they'll find you just Locked On Fantasy Basketball, right?
Yep, Locked On Fantasy Basketball. If you search that on iTunes, Stitcher, I've got an RSS feed, which you can find on my website, which is redrockbasketball.com. It's hosted over on Audioboom as well. There's links in my Twitter profile. You can find that everywhere. But yeah, if searching Locked On, we'll find it for sure.
Sounds great. All right. Thanks so much, Josh. Look forward to seeing you soon. You guys follow him on Twitter and check out Locked On Fantasy Basketball. Thanks, Josh.
Thanks, Keith.
All right. That was good stuff from Josh. Hope you guys were also interested in pharmacist salaries. Hope that didn't get too slow. But anyway, thanks for listening. Check us out on Twitter at Fast Break Break. Give us some feedback if you liked this format, if there's something you want to hear, or if there's some other guest you want us to have or you think we should have. Remember to go to fanessentials.net, get all the essentials you need. Follow us on rabble.tv. We need more listeners doing their own rabbles, especially for this Olympic time and for the tournament. Like us on Facebook. Go ahead and write us an iTunes review. 5 stars, please. Thanks for listening. You guys are the best. And remember, despite what Josh says, breakfast is the most important thing.